and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. Soon, Ukraine's former President Zelensky will reveal his so-called victory plan to Joe Biden. What possibly could be new? Also, can Israel succeed in defeating its enemies with high tech? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is deputy foreign editor of Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Okay, to kick it off, let's go to Georgia in Budapest. You know, it's been talked about quite a bit over the last few weeks, this victory plan, as the former president of Ukraine, Zelensky, is calling it. And there's been some drips and drabs about what it could possibly mean. Before we go into some of the possible points of it here, why now, George?
Well, the Biden administration is heading out the door. So if one thinks about what's you know, entailed in the victory plan, and we've basically got into we got hints of it through a variety of news reports. It's a wish list of all the things that Zelensky would like from the United States and from the West in general. Now, he may be figuring, and I think it's not an unreasonable estimate, that since the Biden administration is going out of the door, then it's willing to impose all sorts of problems on its successors. I mean, Biden is obviously very unhappy about departing from the scene. He didn't want to do it. He wanted to be president next year. But since he's not going to be president, he may well decide, hey, give Zelensky whatever he wants, and that's going to be a headache for whoever succeeds me. So Zelensky may be calculating that this is probably the right time to just present a laundry list of wishes, and the Americans will say, hey, well, you know, what the hell? It's going to be, we're not going to be here for much longer. It's going to be a headache for whoever comes next.
Well, or an alternative theory is that this victory plan is supposed to fail and force other events on the ground here. Dima, let's go through some of the things that that have been bandied about, okay? It's been reported by various sources. Part of the plan is to allow unrestricted long-range missile strikes into Russia. Next point, to invite Ukraine in the borders of 1991 to join NATO at a nearby date, whatever that means, to immediately negotiate and accept Ukraine's membership in the European Union. Okay, more fantasy. To permanently supply advanced heavy weapons to Ukraine. That's been on the agenda now for the last few weeks. And to provide hundreds of billions of dollars for reconstruction without any restrictions attached to it. I tend to think the last point is the one they're hoping for more than anything else. Dima, again, this is all kind of fantasy stuff. And as we have all three have talked about in the past, remember we have the Zelensky peace plan. So the victory plan is to implement the peace plan. That's what it looks like to me. This is the chain of events. Dima.
Well, according to Le Figaro, a French daily newspaper, basically Ukraine is losing on the ground because contrary to the expectations of Zelensky and his clique, Russia did not deploy the forces that were making progress in Donbas to the Russian region of Kursk, attacked by the Ukrainian forces. So that incursion is becoming more of a problem for the Ukrainian army. Since Russia is not stopping its advance in Donbas, and Donbas is the main battle, don't forget about. So in terms of timing, I think basically I can agree with the author, Le Figaro, it makes sense to have maybe not a permanent peace, but at least a ceasefire right now for Zelensky in order to save himself from a total defeat. But there are certain facts, there are certain hints which show that what you said about the outlandish proposals, we may see in these weeks. Because according to the latest reports, the so-called peace summit is going to be in Abu Dhabi in November, probably right after the election. And let's look at history. It's usually towards the end of a president's tenure in office or of a term that this or that president gets very aggressive about Russia. Let's remember, Bill Clinton It was friend Boris in the beginning. It was the Yugoslav war in the end. George Bush the Jr., it was Ljubljana, and I looked into his eyes in the beginning. It was the invitation of Ukraine and Georgia to NATO in 2008. With Obama, it was even more obvious. The reset in the beginning, and basically the war in Ukraine, which started in 2014 under Obama, in the end of his tenure. So with Biden, he started with the Geneva summit, and I'm just terrified to think what could be the end of his term. So what
But what you're saying here, and I'll throw it back to George here, is that there's no real change of thinking in Washington and in London. They're going to continue this. I think you all saw the recent interview with Victoria Nuland when the question was about the Istanbul process a few weeks into the conflict. And we don't have to go over what she said. You just have to look how she said it. She was so smug. I mean, it's broken and we all have to fix it. There's no choice. We're on this path and we have to continue it. That's what makes this very, very depressing. What Zelensky has in his plan is immaterial to me, George.
No, I agree with you, Peter, because I think that it's very important to differentiate what Zelensky and Kiev want and what the United States and NATO want. The United States and NATO really couldn't care less about Ukraine. I absolutely couldn't care less. They don't care how many lives have been lost. They're not even that interested in what's going on the battlefield, just as long as Ukraine can continue the fight. But their objective all along has been to weaken, degrade, humiliate Russia, knock it back, decades, centuries in terms of the physical and economic development, obviously hoping to kill off as many Russians as possible. And as long as Zelensky is willing to go along with that, and indeed is eager, more than eager to go along, hey, give me this weapon, give me that weapon, give me, remove all the restrictions on using weapons, let's provoke an even worse war, then they're happy with it. And that's why when you say it's depressing, yes, it's depressing because for them, they say, hey, this war is achieving what we wanted. And I think, the other goal, of course, is to separate Russia permanently from Europe. So that whole, the deal between Russia and Europe, which has been an American nightmare since the end of, since the fall of the Soviet Union, that's off the table. So for the Americans to say, well, yeah, let's keep it going. Why, why not? And that's why I think that Zelensky, who wants very badly, as part of this victory plan, to remove all restrictions on the use of this long-range weapons, whether it's the Attackums or the Scalp, the French Scalp missiles, I think he'll get it. There may not be a public announcement, but I think that they will do it because they say, hey, this is good. It's more headaches for Russia. There's more lives lost, more pain and humiliation, and everything is up to them to decide what they're going to do. So I think that, that within the next few months, we will see a terrible escalation.
Yeah, because, Dima, also, it's very interesting in this so-called victory plan, and it will eventually be revealed. What it does is it puts this conflict squarely into NATO world, because the only way this conflict can move forward is if NATO is actively involved in agreeing to it. And this is what the Russians have been saying from day one. This is a NATO conflict. And if it's going to move forward, if Ukraine is even going to continue to exist in its current form, it's going to have to be a NATO decision one way or another. Zelensky, in a weird way, wins. I mean, his country loses, but he wins at least the narrative everybody likes to use for the time being, Dima.
I think that basically Ukraine and Russia, it's not a conflict between Ukraine and Russia. It's a conflict, let's be fair about it, between the global South that stands behind Russia. It is larger, and the global West. It's interesting, a few days ago, India, Japan, and the United States and Australia came out with a statement on durable peace in Ukraine, keeping its territorial gravity. And that statement did not contain the word Russia. Yeah. In the same way, I mean, they pretend not to understand that Russia has huge interest in Ukraine, that Ukraine is very important for the security of Russia, that it's existential for Russia. They pretend not to notice it. And basically, I agree with George. And coming back to what I said about the beginning of every presidential term in America being pro-Russian and then being very hawkish. Well, in the beginning, the president is fresh from talking to voters. Voters in the United States want peace with Russia and with other countries. But towards the end, there is more and more influence of the elites. And what you described, you know, striking Russian territory deep, striking deep inside Russian territory by European-made weapons. By the way, Europe already gave its agreement. It's the United States that is wishy-washy about it. The European leaders.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those really weird situations where an American administration tells the British, "You can use your missiles
exactly
against Russia." It's very. It shows how the empire is.
Yeah. The problem is.
Let me go back to George before we go to the break here. You know, George, I'm glad Dima brought up these other countries that are considering. The protection of Ukrainian sovereignty, but it's something that you and I have brought up, and Dima, over the years now, is that the victory plan, the peace plan, all the other plan, they never talk about, or very rarely talk about, security. George?
No, absolutely right. Because in their view, the Western view, and you can hear it in speeches, or particularly of Stoltenberg, is when he talks about our security, NATO security. That's the only thing that matters. This is our security, and they never acknowledge that other countries, and particularly as we've seen, Russia's security is in any way, you know, it even matters. Apparently, Russia's role is simply to accept NATO's assurances, American assurances, at face value. We are peaceful.
We're just a defensive alliance.
No, we don't intend war. And apparently Russia should accept this. But of course, then you say, well, how come you don't accept Russia's assurances? There you're talking about our security, but you don't accept anything that Russian leaders say about, well, we have no aggressive intent, we have no interest in that. So it's their complete blindness to the appreciation of other countries' security. And that is what has led NATO and Russia to this disastrous point.
And once that's recognized, this conflict could come to an end. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Dima, before I went to the break, you wanted to make one more point about what this so-called victory plan. Go ahead.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a nightmare because they decided to double down. I mean, read what Kurt Volker says. I think it was in the Washington Post, I guess, right? Strike deep into Russia with Western weapons. Embed Western experts into the Ukrainian army. I mean, Kurt Volker was a special representative of Obama for several years. His job was to prevent this war, not to let it happen. He failed miserably. And now what does he suggest? To make the war more terrible, you know, to strike deep into Russia, to send U.S. military to Ukraine. You know, what they say, it seems to me, also there's a very dangerous point they make. Until Putin is in power, there will be no peace. So it reminds me of Lenin's revolutionary rhetoric. You probably remember he said, capitalism is a nightmare without an end. So we will end this nightmare with horror, and it's better to have it than to have horror for the rest of our lives. And that basically led to the revolution and to all the ensuing consequences. These people, you know, they lie, because when they say there can be no peace with Putin, it goes against facts, against logic. Under Putin, there was an improvement in Russia-US relations in the early 2000s. Russia did everything to preserve relationship with the European Union, with the United States. So a conservative estimate shows that peace is possible, but these people are pushing a revolutionary theory. We can only have peace if we make a regime change in Russia. And that goes against the promise of Blinken. Let me quote him. We are not looking for regime change in any place, including Moscow. That turned out to be a lie, which he said in the beginning of Biden's term.
The problem is that all these plans, whether it comes from the former president of Ukraine or illegal president of Ukraine, however you want to define it, they don't talk about peace.
Expired president of Ukraine.
Exactly. Expired presidency. Don't say president. President.
Okay.
Let's switch gears here, George. All of us have been just aghast by this technological techno-terrorism that Israel has employed in Lebanon, continuing as we speak right now. And of course, defenders of Israel were quite gleefully on social media were happy to see, and I'm obviously referring to the pagers and to other electronic devices that were somehow in one form or another captured and used as a weapon. I mean, it was really quite amazing that very few have pointed out that this whole process is creating involuntary suicide bombers, which of course is terrorism here. I suppose what I find, not only do I find this very disturbing, because in a country like Lebanon, beepers are used by medical personnel a lot, okay? I mean, there's a dual use, as they say here. But George, doesn't this set a precedent that, well, if Israel can do such a terrorizing thing and be applauded by the West, what's to stop other countries and groups doing the same thing?
I think that's the salient point here, Peter, because what Israel did was that obviously it did inflict a humiliation on Hezbollah, because that obviously the whole Hezbollah network, the supply chain, everything had been completely penetrated by Israel. But what's, I think, really important is that Israel's enablers, Israel's champions, and the West are celebrating this. So, these were targeted attacks. Of course, they weren't targeted attacks, because even if, you know, you put the beeper can be in the pocket of somebody from Hezbollah, you know, he may be in a marketplace, he may be in a school, he may be on a plane, he may be on a bus. A lot of other people are going to be hurt, and obviously, thousands of people were hurt as a result of this of these exploding pagers. They weren't targeted attacks. But I think it's very important that once this is done, and then other countries, including Israel, including the United States, are going to say, well, why don't we do this more often? You know, why don't we just take out whomever we don't like? You know, take out Viktor Orban and then say, hey, well, what are you going to do about it? And then it could be, you know, Russian leaders, Russian generals, and say, well, okay, we took them out. You know, that was a targeted attack. What are you going to do about it? Well, you know, what if Israel decides, you know, we don't like some Holocaust denier in London. Why don't we just take him out? So it suddenly starts extending to throughout the world. You just simply, you know, conduct these targeted assassinations. It doesn't matter. You know, you can completely indifferent to who else is going to be hurt as a result. But you created this precedent whereby you could just carry out assassinations and be completely oblivious of the consequences.
Yeah, and even the whole issue of proportionality is now turned on its head. I mean, and when you go, you know, almost every single conflict that the West comments on around the world, they look at the rules of law, the Geneva Convention, is all that, but it never is applied when it comes to Israel here. I mean, the whole issue of proportionality, I mean, to get one combatant, you have to be very, very careful not to take out non-combatants. Now that is complete. Reading and covering these horrific events, the whole issue of proportionality is never mentioned in Western media. All they do is that they seem to be complimenting the Israelis on their ingenuity. Well, killing innocent people intentionally should not be considered ingenious, Dima.
Well, I think something really terrible has just happened this week. It is comparable to the emergence of chemical weapons and nuclear weapons. It's weaponization of household devices. It's something that belonged to science fiction until recently. Now it suddenly became reality. And even if only Hezbollah operatives were hit, that would not make it less of a crime. I mean, when chemical weapons were used by the Germans, you know, during the First World War against the British and the French in Ypres, from here, the word Ypres, you know, for the terrible gas, it was a terrible crime, even though only military people were killed, because everyone suddenly understood how vulnerable humanity was, you know. And of course, it's a way to, for some, I'm sorry, crazy politicians or non-state actors to seek world domination, because what did they do? Even if they were acted only against military personnel, okay? Communication, getting in touch with your soldiers is an essential part of warfare. If you can't get in touch with your soldiers now, you lose. I mean, you cannot continue resisting. So it's a way to world domination. Someone who can use weaponization of household devices can be a dictator of the world. And what is the reaction in the West? Instead of talking about sanctions, instead of saying, hey, something terrible has just happened, a new Hiroshima has just happened, instead they say, the timing could not be worse. Blinken was just coming to Cairo when it I'm quoting the Washington Post, David Ignatius. The timing could not be worse. Blinken's visit failed. It's just ludicrous. They impose all kinds of sanctions on politicians in Russia, in Iran. Sometimes they never killed anyone, you know. They never even called for killing anyone. But these people are under sanctions, Duma deputies, including women, including Olympic champions. And no one is sanctioned in Israel after this terrible, I would say, diabolical. What they did was diabolical.
Yeah, because of the demonstration effect here. I mean, also, George, because of the way Western media portrays the conflict in the Levant, is that, you know, okay, for what many Western countries, Hezbollah is deemed a terrorist organization. Well, most of the world doesn't see Hezbollah as that. It's a political party. It has seats in parliament. It is the, for many, many people, it is the backbone of civil society in Lebanon because of its egregious governance problems. But, you know, Hezbollah has carved out a place for itself. I mean, it did liberate southern Lebanon from occupation by the Israeli occupation. I mean, a lot of people look to Hezbollah, and they're not all combatants. They're nurses, they're doctors, they're taxi drivers. George.
No, obviously, that's the case. That Hezbollah is a movement. But what Israel has demonstrated, and incidentally, I want you to say, I'm not at all sure Israel did this by itself. This required a great deal of technological sophistication. And I have to think that they had help, to say the least, from the CIA, for the Americans. The Americans are really masters of science.
Well, I mean, George, to back that up, I mean, right after it happened on the first day with the pagers, from what I could tell, the White House said they had nothing to do with it, new knowledge of it. By the third day, they it's been reported that they were aware of such an attack, but maybe not all the detail. I mean, they change their story all the time, just to back you
exactly.
up.
Exactly. They change the story all the time. And it was also interesting that when the other day, when Israel carried out this assassination of Ibrahim Akil, this Hezbollah leader, the Americans were gleeful. They were just rejoicing because he allegedly took part in this bombing of the American Marine barracks and the American embassy in Beirut in 1983. So that's from 40 years ago. Again, this is all alleged. They have no idea that he took part in this. But either way, it's from 40 years ago. You don't just carry out assassinations from what happened over 40 years ago. But the point is that this kind of activity is done in order to demoralize, to humiliate, and to put essentially the fear into Hezbollah. And I think there Israel had succeeded to the extent that you can succeed.
Well, I mean,
in sort of selling them, well, hey, you are up against somebody vastly more technologically sophisticated than you are. It's not going to address Israel's long-term problems, but it is an act, against Hezbollah of saying, well, now what are you going to do? You're up against us being Israel and the United States.
Well, eventually, since a precedent has been set, the shoe will be on the other foot. I wonder how Londoners or New Yorkers will feel when 3,000 of their citizens are hit by this kind of techno-terrorism. The attitude will be very, very different, I can tell you. Again, the hypocrisy is extraordinary. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.